Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
So my next question is, what were some of the biggest challenges you faced as a coach, and how did you overcome them?
Challenges? Probably because I was – let's maybe go back to when I first started was the – probably running a practice.
Yeah.
That's definitely something that you have to know how to do as a coach, but it's a learning curve. You don't just, like, learn overnight.
Right.
You
exactly.
don't just like learn one night how to run it. Like, it's through trial and error, right? You have to try it. Okay, that didn't work. Scrap it. Then the next, then you try this. Okay, that worked. All the kids liked it. All the kids. You want to do things that, to, especially when you're dealing with 14 or 15 year olds that have an attention span of like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to keep their attention, their right. engagement. So when you are conducting a practice plan, maybe the night before the day of a practice or maybe the morning of, whenever you have time, it's like, okay, what were some of the drills that we did, you know, last week or whatever, or yesterday that we could do again that the kids liked? You know, that, okay, this drill, too much downtime, scrap it. Let's try something else. Let's get a little bit more innovative. Nick, Coach Bandera, Ash, they all helped me because I was kind of coming in with not the greatest knowledge of how to come up with a practice plan.
Right.
So that was probably the most challenging thing. But as the days and weeks went on throughout a 4-month season, you kind of learn, okay, these are the drills that the kids like, that they stay engaged, but they also get better, right? Yeah. You don't want drills that, okay, you maybe like, but it doesn't really help you, right? Like you want that perfect balance of, okay, the kids stay engaged in this, but they also are improving their skills at the same time.
Right.
So that was a big challenge early on. And every coach still can, like, even a 20-year veteran coach can still learn things to get better as
right.
a coach.
Right. Exactly.
So another challenge, maybe other than practice plans, was how to coach a game. The intricacies of coaching the game itself, the clock, right, the situation, game and score and, you know, time and score, when to call a timeout, what play to draw up in the timeout, what defense should we switch to. Those are all the things that and everything happens so fast.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You think, you know, a second is way quicker than it actually is. So you're just like, okay, what? Because when the game's going on, you're like, okay, is this defense working? Okay, who should I put in? You know,
yeah.
I got
Subs.
Yeah, subs is definitely a challenge.
Subs is tough.
To learn. Everything was a learning curve, so practice plans, game management, I guess, is the best way to put that. And then substitution patterns. Maybe I put in player X and, you know, maybe he's usually one of our better players, but tonight he's off, you know, so maybe let's try someone else, you know, stuff yeah. like that. Those are all the things that, and then he maybe ride the hot hand, stuff like that. A third thing maybe is part of, you know, not everything is about the basketball mm-hmm. when you're a coach. It's,
yeah.
it's personalities,
right?
It's team morale.
Yeah,
it's attitudes, and most importantly, you're not just an athlete; you're a student. I would get emails from teachers that were not good, right? From this guy being misbehaving in class that day, right? So that's a whole nother aspect of coaching that maybe not a lot of people think that is that important or right. that big of a factor. But it's not great when you get an email at noon, right, and practice is at 3 of, you know, Joey was being insubordinate, right? And you're like, okay, now I have to figure out how to properly, you know, discipline, because student always came first. You guys have had to get good grades first and foremost to be able to get the privilege to play basketball.
Yeah,
basketball wasn't just something that was given, it was earned, right? It's a selection sport, so you have to make the cut, and you have to be a well-rounded person, and that starts with your academics, and then, you know, the basketball is kind of like a second thing. But if you had the first part, then you get that privilege to play basketball, and then you can really strive to get better at that too. But so dealing with like parents and teachers, you know, basketball is a selection sport, like I said, but you're not going to please everyone in the process.
Sure.
From any player to any parent, right?
Yeah.
Not everyone gets the privilege to play. You know, you hold 12 to 15 players. Well, only 5 can play at one time, right? So not everyone gets the privilege. So that was a challenge of how to deal with the outsiders, like the teachers and the parents that have nothing to do with basketball.
Yeah.
That have nothing to do with what play you should run or what defense or when should I call a timeout, right? Who should I put in? Like the parent, they want their kid to play. Every parent in the world wants their kid to play.
Of course.
So, but when that doesn't happen, you know, and it's obviously nothing personal. I have nothing personal against anybody. It's just a selection sport, and some kids are better than others, right? So that was a challenge of dealing with parents that come up to me, email me, and be like, why isn't my son playing? Right. And that was difficult. Sometimes I just had Ross do it, right? So, but it was definitely more of a heightened challenge when I was by myself and had to deal with the parents. Oh, yeah. But I was more experienced when I was at Orange, because I was 4 years down the road. I had 4 years under my belt, and I got better and better as the years went on of, you know, kind of finding that right answer, you know, to not make them feel like it's anything personal and stuff like that. So just to put a bow on that, it's practice plans, game management I learned. Those were challenges, substitution pattern, and dealing with the outside. The whole second part of being a coaching is dealing with attitudes. Like you come into practice one day or the office and be like, hey, I didn't play as much last game, you know? And it's like that, because you have, everyone has feelings, you know, and everyone has their kind of their feelings towards how many minutes they should play or what should happen or how many shots they should get. And when something doesn't go their way, you kind of have to find that ability to communicate with the players to get them to be like, okay, like it didn't go well yesterday, but my coach still believes in me. You know what I mean? Like if you played 20 out of the 32 minutes one game and then you played 14 out of 32 minutes, you know, it's not the end of the world, right? But you still have to deal and communicate with your players about everything. Just stay the course, you know? So those were some challenges. And hopefully I was able to get better at those things as my career went on.
Oh, yeah. So can you recall any particular impactful or transformative experience that you had coaching a specific player?
So the year before you, there was this kid, Jack Herber. If he's listening, what's up, Jack? Hope you're well. So Jack was injured during tryouts, and he had a walking boot on, and I was with Joe Hayes at the time. This is the year that Ross stepped down to be the football coach. And obviously, like I just said, basketball is a selection sport. You get X amount of kids who come out and want to make the team, and maybe two-thirds of them make them, half of them make, depending on how many you have try out.
Right.
Let's say you have 25 kids try out, 12 can only make it, 13 get told no. That's very difficult to tell a kid who comes out, tries his hardest for 2 weeks, it's tryouts is maybe like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, for sure, 4 days.
Yeah, and, you know, they work their butt off, and then tryouts are over, and you have to pick 12 out of the 20, 12 out of the 25, right? So that's very difficult to tell a kid that. And there was a like I said, there was this kid, Jack. You were in eighth grade at the time, and he was injured, but he played the previous year, eighth grade.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much he played exactly because I wasn't around, but Joe, and we still talk about this we've talked about this multiple times reflecting back about, he's always been like, man, you know, thank God you did that. And he was hurt. And unfortunately, if you're hurt during tryouts, you can't try out, obviously. So you can't like make your case to be on the team.
Yeah, showcase your skills.
Yeah, exactly. So it's almost, it's like very difficult to be like, all right, we're going to give you a spot, right? Over another kid who actually did go and try out. So I don't remember how many kids we kept that year, but it was getting to the ends of tryouts to where we're needed to narrow down the kids, right? And me and Joe would sit down with the kids together and tell them yes or no or whatever. And right before we did that, Joe was like, Jack's hurt. He couldn't like try out. Like we can't keep him. And I'm like, I don't agree with that. And he's like, based off what? And I'm just like, I talked to some people and they said this kid has some potential and I think we should see it through. And he's like, Jack was like close to coming back too.
Yeah.
So like he wasn't that far off from getting his boot off and being able to return to basketball activities. So I convinced Joe to keep him, even though he didn't technically try it. So like we kept him, we gave him a jersey and we're like, when you get healthy, we're going to give you a chance to try out. So we kind of like kicked the can down the road a little bit with his tryout. And then we were able to, and then he impressed us. And 3 years later, he was starting on varsity. So like, I look back at that and being like, damn, what if we would have cut him?
Yeah.
And just being like, you're hurt, sorry, right? But then you instill this belief in this kid being like, wow, like I'm hurt, but these coaches still like think that I can make an impact later when I'm healthy, you know, right? And I look back and reflect on it now and just being like, damn, I was very pleased how that unfolded because like that kind of like kickstarted Jack's, because ninth grade's your first high school year.
Yeah.
So like if you get told no right off the get-go, it can bring you down, right?
Yeah.
It can maybe deter you from trying out the next year, right? And be like, oh, well, the coaches don't think I'm good enough. Forget it. I'm not going out my 10th grade year or 11th or 12th, right? So like I was glad looking back that we were able to kind of like kickstart Jack's career with giving him a chance, giving that just – sometimes all you need is a chance, right?
That's it.
So we were able to give him a chance when he was injured. He came back, and he was ended up being one of our better players that year. And then, like I said, he had a good career throughout Mayfield and was starting senior year. So that was definitely something that that was impactful to me. Very gratifying.
Yeah, and also, too, he was one of my favorite teammates I've ever had.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Great kid. Super uplifting, like whenever you did something wrong.
Was there a kid that worked harder? I mean,
yeah.
Geez.
Yeah, just great player, and also
he maybe spent more time on the floor than he did on his feet. Like that dude was diving for balls. Oh yeah, right. Like what a coachable kid that was. So very glad we kept him around,
and also someone who wants to see his teammates. Oh, I know. Succeed.
All about the selflessness, right?
So that kind of leads into my next question. What qualities make a in your opinion, what qualities make a great basketball player?
One that has a great work ethic. You're not like, not everyone is just like born with, you know, like talent and skill. You have to really work at it. So work ethic, coachability, the ability to listen, absorb criticism when it comes. And also one that handles success well, like the ability to prosper.
Yeah.
When you score the most points in a game and help your team win, right? That could sometimes make you feel like, oh, well, I don't need to go to practice the next day and work on my game because I just had 25 last night.
Yeah.
Right? So you want to come back the next day and not be satisfied. One that's not satisfied with any performance, whatever. Like, sure, that night you feel great. But the sun comes up the next day, and guess what? You got to get right back to work, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the ability to prosper and handle success is huge. I mean, it's from ninth grade to the pros. I mean, so that commitment and that dedication of, hey, I know I led my team in scoring last night and we won, and that feels amazing, but we have another game in 2 days.
Yeah.
So I need to come back to practice the next day and still work as hard as I did the day before. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So that I think is a huge quality in basketball for a player. What else? So I said coachability, work ethic,
yep.
The ability to handle success or failure. Right.
Sure.
You can't let failure bring you down either. Just as much as you can't have success, like maybe like take you off the gas pedal, so to speak. But you also can't have failure bring you down in the ditch, right? Where it's like,
hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You lose all confidence. Like sometimes you're going to go 2 for 10 from the field, just basketball, right? But how do you come back and respond? So I think another quality is resilience.
Yeah. So it's true. That was like my favorite like thing. Like no matter what happened to me in my career, like I was always like resilient mm-hmm. and strong because I mean, you just learn so much from that experience.
Right. So resilience, the ability to handle success, work ethic, coachability, and you like have to have the spirit and the love for the game. Like
if you're
not out there loving what you do, then you shouldn't be out there. Like you have to have that spirit and that just that drive to get better. So if it's not something that like you wake up every morning being like, damn, I can't wait to go out on the court. Whether it's practice, whether it's a game, whether it's a summer run, right?
Yeah.
Like you just look forward to those moments. So those are maybe the top five qualities that I think make a great player. And if you have all five of those, not every player is going to have all five, resiliency and all that stuff. But I mean, if you do, like you're most likely going to have a successful career. I don't know how far it gets you. That's just kind of based on your talent.
Oh, yeah.
But So if you possess those five, you give yourself a good chance to be successful.
Oh, yeah. So before I end it off with three more questions, I just have some kind of other questions that I want to ask you. So.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Obviously, you're a big Cavs fan, right?
Yes.
So Cavs magic prediction.
Okay. So my family and I have been season ticket holders for the Cavs for a long time. This is actually our 21st year, so I have a lot of –
crazy.
Yeah, I'm very, very blessed with that. Been at a lot of big games. So I am a Cavs fanatic.
Diehard Cavs fan.
Diehard Cavs fan for sure. Cavs magic is going to be what's the best word? It's going to be muddy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean by that?
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be – you're talking two top seven defenses.
Yeah.
Okay. The Magic were third in defensive rating, which is points allowed per 100 possessions. That's how they rank defenses. So the Magic were third. They gave up the third least points per 100 possessions. The Cavs gave up the seventh least. So we're talking two juggernaut defensive teams with tons of size, right? So you're talking Evan Mobley and Jared Allen up front against Franz Wagner, Paolo Banchero, Wendell Carter, and then a sleeper player in the series that I think's going under the radar that's on Orlando is Jonathan Isaac.
Yes, great player.
Yes, he's very underrated. most of his career has been derailed through injuries, by injuries.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really get the publicity because he's always on the sideline hurt.
Yeah.
So now that he's healthy, that brings a whole nother dimension to that Orlando defense. He is so tall, so long, and freaky athletic. He doesn't even have to like block your shot to change your shot, to alter your shot, to even change your mind. Like a guard will go in there and think he's got a shot at the basket, and Isaac's just standing there with his arms up and you pass, right?
Well,
so go on. What were you going
to
say?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was going to say, too, people forget he was also a lottery pick. I think he was like the seventh or sixth pick.
Yes.
I mean, great player, tons of talent.
Yes.
But obviously, you know.
Jalen Suggs was two picks after Mobley in the 21 draft.
Yeah.
He had some injuries. He's from Gonzaga. He is an elite on-ball perimeter defender. So I think he's going to give the Cavs guards all that he can handle.
Oh, yeah,
So
sure.
Darius and Donovan really have to step up to the plate, hopefully, during this, because Donovan and Darius last played on the 12th. We play on the 20th. So hopefully that 8 days that they get in between their last game, they can get as healthy as possible and learn and watch a lot of film on Jalen to find ways to exploit him. But so I think it's going to be muddy. I think it's going to be hard fought. I think there's going to be tons of physicality. My hope is that the Cavs learn from last year's Knicks series.
Yeah,
because I think this Magic team is like almost like a poor man's Knicks, like a step below the Knicks.
They're very similar. I mean, the Knicks last year, they had Brunson, so star, obviously, like a really young star.
Right.
Obviously, Paolo, young star.
Right.
And then you also have like the bigs. Like
right.
You said Jonathan Isaac, Franz.
That reminds you of Mitchell Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein.
Yeah. Which gave us
tons of problems. So I actually looked. This is actually funny because I had family over today and we were talking about this series.
Yeah.
I looked up last year's stats from the playoffs. What people forget is the Cavs still had the best defensive rating out of all playoff teams last year in the playoffs.
Really?
So the Cavs did better than any other defense.
Yeah.
We allowed the least amount of points per 100 possessions to the Knicks. And it's crazy to think, like, how could that be if the Cavs had the best defense but still – only won one game in the series. It came down to the offense. That's where we lost the series, was our inability to score the basketball. The games were in the 90s. We were right there in a lot of the games. We just couldn't muster up enough points. That's where this year the Cavs learned their lessons in the offseason. The front office did a good job of adding spacing, adding shooting, adding creation. Max Strus has had like 7 or more assists like almost every game this month of April.
And also he recorded his first triple-double
in the last year because we were literally without a point guard.
Yeah.
Darius and Donovan sat, and Craig Porter Jr. got hurt early in the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, Strus's three-point percentage was what it was last year, 35%. He shot 35% last year at Miami. But he can have those games of making 6 or 7 that really can propel you to victory. I was actually at the Max Strus three-quarters court
no
shot.
Way.
Yep, I was there.
Great game.
It's still unbelievable. So, and he made like 5 threes in that fourth quarter, including the 59-footer. So,
this is crazy.
But back to the Magic series. So that's where the Cavs' additions in the offseason can help our offense. Because if our defense stays the same as it was in last year's playoffs – you know, and again, we were 7th in the league this year. But you have to remember, like, Evan Mobley, who's an elite defensive player, missed like 35 games this year.
Yeah.
So maybe the Cavs could have been in the top 5 in defense. But we ended up 7th. But again, Evan missed a lot of time. So are you talking like what's my prediction?
Yeah,
prediction?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, my prediction is I do think because of the – if we can bring our top – our elite defense, like I said, we were the best defense in the playoffs last year. We were 7th this year in playoffs in the regular season. Could have been better with having played more games, potentially. And then we use our acquisitions to our advantage. And, like, instead of, like, Chetty Osman and, like, Ricky Rubio, right?
Yeah.
And, like, Lamar Stevens on the court.
Yeah.
We're talking Max Strus, you know, George Niang. Sam Merrill's emerged, and he's an absolute sniper. Right, me and you were at the Sam Merrill emergence game.
Yeah,
like when he first came onto the scene was a December game against the Rockets.
Yeah,
we were Mitchell was sick or something, and like Sam Merrill came in overtime and like made all the big shots, and that, and like from there his career flew on. But my official prediction, I guess you're putting me on the spot here. I think the Cavs win this series because their offense is better than it was last year come playoff time.
Yeah.
There's more spacing. Apparently, according to Donovan, I don't know if he's lying or not, but he claims he's 100%, so that's always good. I do think the Cavs win this series, but I don't think it's a short series. I think it's going to come down to 6 or 7 games.
Yeah, I agree.
Orlando is just not going to hand you the series.
Yeah.
They're going to make you earn it. And I think, or I'm hoping that what the Cavs from last year learn their lesson and learn what it takes to win a playoff series. It's good that we have home court. It's also good that Orlando is inexperienced and hasn't been in the playoffs. So that's an advantage for the Cavs. The Orlando Magic were 22nd in offense, so they're not really posing an offensive threat. Yeah. So if we can generate enough stops with our good defense and maybe get out in the get out in transition and get easier baskets, hopefully that can help us win the series. But I do think it goes 6 or 7 games. So if I had to make an official prediction, I'm going to go Cavs in 6.
I 100% agree. I think Cavs in 6 is definitely going to be my prediction for sure.
Now, if the Cavs lose this series, that's obviously not going to sit well with the fan base or with the owner at all, with Dan Gilbert at all.
Yeah.
There's going to be wholesale changes, which that's a lot of pressure because I think the players know that, right? I think the coach knows that.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of pressure to win this series, right? So if you don't, because you didn't trade 3 first-round picks and Larry Markkanen and Colin Sexton, you didn't acquire Donovan Mitchell and trade all that for him to lose in the first round back-to-back years. You didn't do that to lose first round back-to-back years. So there's a lot of pressure, and like pressure bursts the pipe, right? So I really hope there's going to be a lot. I'm going to be going to game one, and I just know there's going to be a lot of anxious energy, like that nerve-wracking, because like you can't lose game one at home. We did it last year against New York, and that set us back the entire series. We lost home court right off the get-go, and then we were trying to get it back the whole series. We weren't able to win game 3 or 4 in New York and bring it and get our home court back. So game one is crucial.
It is.
You can't do what you did last year and lose home court right off the bat. Win that first game, kind of get that monkey off the back, being like, okay, we won that first game. We have a lead. Let's keep it going. So game one is huge. Thankfully, we're playing an inexperienced squad who hasn't been in the playoffs before. Maybe we can take advantage and exploit that. But Cavs in 6. So I think that we win the first two. And then we split.
Yeah.
If I think 6, so we would finish it off in Orlando in game 6. So
yeah.
Maybe we split 2-2.
Yeah, that's
and then like we win game 5 back at home and then close it out in Orlando. So maybe it's 2-2 after 4. And if it's 2-2 after 4, this city is going to be going nuts. I even want to like read Twitter or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But the fan base is very, very passionate. And you love it. Cleveland sports is so like all the fans are so passionate. They live and die with like every single game. I mean,
exactly.
It's like the end of the world if you lose a regular season game, right? But Cavs in 6 would be my prediction. I hope that we can move on and see what happens against the Celtics, but I don't want to get ahead. If we lose, I'm going to feel like, does Donovan leave? Does JB get fired? We'll see. I guess we'll tackle that when the time comes, but hopefully we can get this done.
Yeah. So my next question is, would you say that being a ref is one of the hardest jobs in the world? I mean – honestly, like I've had some experience just like being a ref, coaching like little kids,
right?
Like kindergartners, first graders, second graders, third graders, and I mean the parents who would come up to me about the calls, I'm like, your kid doesn't even know how to dribble a basketball. Like, I mean, refs take on so much heat. I mean, especially in the professionals. I mean,
oh yeah,
all over Twitter, all over Instagram, just everything. So, from your experience,
I don't know about if it's one of the harder jobs in the world, but because there's obviously a lot of jobs I don't have experience in, so I can't speak for others. But speaking from my experience, officiating basketball, and I also officiate baseball, so I don't know if you're talking about both. But
yeah, kind of both.
So starting with the professional level, I mean, you're talking about you know how gambling's come onto the scene, right?
Oh,
sports gambling.
Huge.
So, like, you as a referee in the NBA, MLB, like, every foul call, every out-of-bounds call, every strike, every ball, every out, every fair, every foul, it affects people's money.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, you probably don't want to think about it like that, but it's the reality of the situation.
It's true.
I mean, you call strike three to end the game when it was a ball, right?
Someone lost
thousands of dollars or whatever, right? And or you can affect someone's season, right? So that stuff is like way above my pay grade. Yeah. So just winding it back to like my level, which is like the high school, I do some college preparatory stuff, college prep, they call it. So,
yeah, right.
You know, varsity games, you know, there's a little bit more at stake. You know, a freshman and JV game, you know, you don't kind of feel as much pressure, I guess, if you will. So, but varsity game, you know, the student sections are there. You know, it's the 7:30 game. It's the nightcap. You know, it's the thing that goes in the paper. Yeah. You know, it's the thing that affects seeding for state tournament. So all those things are reality when you're officiating. But when I'm out there and the ball tips, you just really want to just have a very short-term memory. You don't want to think too much macro stuff about, oh, this may affect this team's season and what they may end up being seeded in the tournament or all that stuff. So I try to think very micro and just like take it play by play and just try to call the fairest game I can. Nobody's perfect. I'm not perfect. The best referee in the NBA who's been doing it forever, like Scott Foster, he's not perfect either. So it's just go out, put yourself in position, try to get the right angle. Something that a lot of players and fans don't understand is angle is better than distance. So like sometimes, because we're on the court level, we're not, all the fans have this aerial view.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like so much easier.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
From halfway up the bleachers. Your angle's so much better. We're on the floor, court level, eyeball level with all the players. Some players are taller than us, right? And you're deciphering whether, you know, player got fouled, whether it's a block or charge. So those split second decisions are, yeah, I mean, I can't sit here. I would lie if I would say, oh, it's easy, you know, but it's something that you watch it like you watch film.
Yeah.
You know, you go out and practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you learn from other referees. You know, like when I go to Cavs games, I'm not just rooting for the Cavs and watching what they do and all that stuff. I watch the officials.
Oh yeah.
How they conduct themselves, what they're calling, why they're calling it, right? I always listen to their explanations during when something's challenged and they go to the little microphone and they go, they have to review, right? And I want to hear why they call stuff like that. So, you know, I'm always trying to absorb knowledge when it comes to the officiating, right?
Right.
You know, I'm that fan that goes, oh, yeah, that's not right,
yeah.
right? But at the end of the day, I'm one of them, not at their level, but I you know, I do what they do, right? Just at a lesser level. So, because I, you know, obviously I don't like when I get yelled at, right? But it's just the nature of the business. It comes with the territory. It's what I signed up for. So you do have to have some thick skin. But, I mean, I love what I do. So, you know, and I've been going at it now, baseball 13 years, basketball 8. So, you know, I always look forward to when I have a game. So it's definitely fun. It's definitely not easy. So you have to have the thick skin and you have to possess the quality of like short-term memory and just like being able to just be like tune it out. Like, okay, when you make a call, one team's going to agree and one team's going to disagree, right?
Exactly.
Some of them are obvious, like, okay, that dude just got mauled. But yeah, it's fun, but it's challenging. And I like the challenge on a day-to-day basis. And I like being a part of a good atmosphere. The best game that I've ever officiated was you were there with your dad.
Yeah,
that was probably my most fun experience, Gilmore at University School, student sections all the way up to the last row, gym filled, Friday night, everyone there, the crowd living and dying by every single possession, like it's the end of the world, you know, like it's the NBA finals. And that's something that can just kind of gets you, you get a little butterflies, but you also are like, all right, this is sweet.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely, I recommend it. We need officials. So if you like it, go take the course. And we, there's a, it's a supply and demand thing, you know, a lot of supply of games out there to work, low demand of referees. So we're kind of struggling right now.
Yeah.
I try to help out as much as I can.
Yeah. Hey, well, you're a great ref.
I appreciate it.
So,
I try.
So looking back, mm-hmm. I guess I kind of combined these questions.
Okay.
So what advice would you give to your younger coaching self, and what advice would you give to aspiring basketball coaches or young athletes looking to become, I guess, a coach in like the future?
So if I knew what I know now compared to maybe back in 2016 was, man, that's a good question. Prioritize practice more. Like sometimes, you know, I wouldn't have the motivation to like conduct a practice, yeah. You know? So it's like, okay, I feel lazy today. Like some days, right? As a player, you're like, you know what? I'm taking today off. Yeah. Like, I don't want to go to the gym. I'm tired. You know, I have all this schoolwork. I don't want to go lift, right? Like coaches have that days too. Like, I don't want to go deal with, I don't want to have to go run a practice today, right? I just want to take today off, right? So, but like going, looking back, that type of drive is like required, right? So to aspiring coaches is like to the best of your ability, like no days off. Like you could always just take a little bit of time out of your day to watch film, watch the game back, go through your practice plan, right? Read articles, books, right? Learn from, call your assistant coach. Be like, hey man, what do you think? Like, what do you think we should do? Like, do you think we should tweak this drill, tweak this practice? You know, do you think we should tweak the lineup, right? So, you know, try to just be as committed as you can because it's a grind. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You know, it's a grueling four-month time frame because, like, you're talking early November to, like, the end of February. And you really don't get any days off other than Sunday. You know, you're talking – practice Monday, game Tuesday, practice Wednesday, practice Thursday, game Friday, practice Saturday morning. Okay, now you're off Sunday, right? So, but on Sunday, that's your kind of like time to sit back and be like, okay, how'd this week go? What can we do better this week? You know, okay, we have Kenston and Chardon coming up this week. Who are their better players? Okay, let's go watch the previous Kenston game and prepare our game. Because you have off Sunday, right? And then you have practice on Monday, then you got a game. So you're thinking on Sunday, okay, how can I best prepare myself for our opponent on Tuesday and tomorrow's Monday practice, right? Okay, Kenston did this last time we played them. They ran this play. I was like the film guy at Mayfield. And obviously, I wasn't orange because I was by myself, but I was always the one that was watching. I would watch the game two or three times.
Yeah.
Like you have to have that commitment. You have to have that drive. So to aspiring basketball coaches is if you get into this, you got to be committed. You can't just half-ass it. Because if you half-ass it, you're just going to not get the results that you want, and then you're going to end up being disappointed. So definitely a drive to take time out of your day every single day to try to improve in any type of facet. What's something else? Maybe communication, because okay. I think that's something that with the players and with the parents, I think we kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier, but like, I wasn't the best at like taking what I was like thinking and then like portraying it to like the players, like, and finding like the best way to like phrase stuff. Right. And that's something that throughout your career that you learn how to communicate with the players to get them to understand where you're coming from. Because not every player is going to agree with every single decision you make. But if you can get your players to understand the why behind something, then you can easily get them to, then they understand the what. If I go, hey guys, we're doing this or let's do this, right? And you're like you, let's say you, for example, who played, You're like, oh, why are we doing this drill?
Yeah, right. Right.
So all these players are like, why are we doing it? Like, that's what ninth graders love saying. Why, coach? Yeah, why do we have to do this, right?
The box out drill. That was the one thing I hated. I was like, why do I have to box out? Like, why? Right? But it's so important.
So, yeah, being able to convey to the players, like, the why behind the what. Because as coaches, they can just think that, oh, we're just going to tell them what to do, what to do, what to do. But how many coaches take the time to be like, here's why we're doing this?
Yeah.
And the coach and the player is like, oh, that makes actual sense. Like, and then you watch film back and you're like, hey, Marcelo, you see this? Now you know why we did this drill in practice?
Yeah.
Because you just missed this shot, or you ran the play wrong, or hey, this worked, right? You did this correctly. That's why we do it in practice, right? Because it translates to the game. So communication, more prioritizing, coming up with practice plans. Because if you go into a practice as a coach and you're just like, okay, what should we do? Like, you gotta be prepared, right? Because if you're prepared as a coach, that drives, in my opinion, that drives the player to be like, oh shit, all right, my coach is, he came ready today, right? He knows what we're doing. Everything's set out to be done, and that could kind of uplift a player to be like, okay, I want to be prepared too. You know, I need to get my homework done so I can, you know, worry about basketball today. You know, so I can go out on my own and lift or go to the court and get shots up, right? So I can stay after practice and spend more time in the gym. So preparation, communication, and stuff like that. So
yeah. So now we officially turn to the quote of the episode. So this is a little segment where I give you a quote and just talk about how this quote relates to your life.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, great coach Billy Donovan. He said,
Bulls coach,
right? And he said, "Systems win. Believe in your system, then sell it to your players."
So your question is, how does that relate?
Like,
oh, okay,
it's like your life, whether that's like, you know. Like, you know, your personal life on the basketball court.
So systems win, believe in your system, and then sell it to your players. So, like, when it comes to coaching, for example, like, you have to have a system. You have to set forth a process. You have to build a foundation, and that's what you have to sell to your players. If you're able to sell to your players that whatever your system is, or your foundation, maybe your core values, if you can get them to believe in what you're selling,
yeah,
then like you get the buy-in from the players, right? There's nothing that brings a team down, right, than when they aren't bought in to what you're selling,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
So, like, you've almost, like, lost the team. Mm-hmm. And there are points where you, like, the players, like, aren't bought in, but then you can, like, almost, like, win it back,
yeah,
right? And there's points where, like I said, we lost to Nordonia by 40.
Yeah.
Were you believing in anything at that point? Probably not, mm-hmm. right? But then throughout the course of the next couple weeks, you know, we do things differently in practice. You know, we tweak things. We win a couple games. And now, like, the team's bought back in, like, okay, what he's selling it does work, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, your system and what you run and how you do things, how to conduct yourself, what your core values are, those are also important. You know, you have to believe it yourself first and foremost as the coach, because if you like don't believe it yourself, then you're just selling fraudulent stuff that you don't even believe in, right?
Right.
So, you know, that's so important. And, you know, if the players are bought in, then you can – that just gives you that extra, you know, gear to have success potentially. So that was a good quote by Billy Donovan. You know, he's done a – you know, he's went from Florida and he's stuck in the NBA. So
yeah.
He had a lot of success at Florida, won a couple championships, and – he's doing, you know, bigger and better things with the Bulls now. So, yeah, that's a good quote. I definitely, Billy's a great coach. So,
yeah. So, what's one quote that you live by every single day?
So, I think like the best quote, and it's so simple, right? It's not some like crazy complex quote, right? And it's, and I first heard it from Coach Spoelstra from the Miami Heat, who's been with Miami forever, won two championships with Miami. No, maybe three. So, so when I was, you know, watching the Heat make their run with LeBron and D-Wade and Bosh, you know, there was something that I noticed that he said to the team in his post-game press conferences to the media, or maybe in the locker room to his players when they would like show snippets of it. And it's like the most simple quote, like I said, it's just, it's stay the course. And that's something that I live by every day, is staying the course is just like, stick to your guns, stick to your principles, believe in what you're doing, no matter how up or how down that you get, right? And if you do that, like, it's just going to, like you're going to have some regression sometimes. You're going to have some progression, ups and downs, right? But if you just stay the course and trust what you're doing will work over the long term or a larger sample, like, that's how you can have a lot of success. Is, and he preached that to the team, you know, that they just have to stay the course, keep at it. And, you know, it, like, because sometimes you don't get results overnight, right? You work on something over and over and over, and you may not get results in the first day or the second day or the third day or the fourth week or the fifth week, but over 6 months, you may get what you strive for. So I think that's something that it just kind of have stuck with me ever since like 2010, when like LeBron was on the Heat, and you know, they lost the first year, right?
Right.
But they had to stay the course over the next couple of years, and then they won the next two. Right. So, that's something that I, you know, abide by every day. And it's just something that I think a lot of people can take to heart and be like, hey, just stay the course. Today wasn't my day, but you know, I should, you know, I got to stick with my guns, stick with the process, stick to your model, and you know, you will see results, over the long term. So,
yeah. And like one quote that I also like live by too, is just, you know, like, you know, everything will always work out. Just keep on going forward. So,
right.
You know, it's just kind of like,
don't take steps backwards, right?
Yeah. It's like, hey, just, you know, even if you had a rough day, even if you had a great day, it's like, hey, just keep on going forward. And, you know, everything always works out. You know, you don't have to worry about stuff. Just, you know, just keep on going. Have faith. Believe in yourself. Stay positive. And
right.
A lot of good things will happen to you.
Amen, brother.
Yeah. So, so thank you again, Coach Johnny, for joining today's podcast.
Dude, thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure talking
to
you. And this episode was awesome. I mean, truly one of the best basketball minds that I know, and definitely in Northeast Ohio. I mean, he knows so much about the game, about professional sports, just everything. Great basketball-minded guy, and also great friend, great coach, and also he's one of the reasons why I had such a successful high school basketball career, and he definitely, you know, built me into, you know, the player that, you know, I still am today. Even though I play for fun and rec, you know, I still have that competitive drive, that competitive spirit, and
And by the way, that's what it's all about right there. It's not about, like, it's great to win, right, all those wins, but if that's the stuff that really, really matters, like, in the big picture, like, just the impact that you can make. So if any aspiring coaches out there, that's what it's really about, making an impact on a kid, you know, bettering them as a man, you know, as a human being, because we're all human beings. We're not just basketball players or basketball coaches. Better yourself, better someone else, you know, make someone's day, make someone's career or season, maybe not career, but season. And, you know, that's what really sticks with you down the road, as here we are 7 years later. Like, I don't remember all the games, right? I don't remember how every single possession went, all the games, all the wins, all the losses. What really sticks with you in the big picture and in the long term is the impact in that you can make on a kid, and the relationship that you make throughout the journey, throughout the all the years that you coach, the parents, the kids, the coaches. That's what's really the coolest part and the coolest aspect of coaching. And so anyone that's looking to get into coaching, I think you may agree with me down the road that, you know, once you kind of have some experience, that you're like, man, this is the coolest part of coaching, is the relationships and the impact that you can make, not about the wins and the losses. So definitely prioritize that as your number one thing when you become a coach, if you do. So I still talk to a lot of the kids that I coached back 7 years ago, and that's probably the coolest thing about it. So had a lot of fun.
Yeah, great words from coach. Great words from a great coach for sure. So be sure to check out this podcast from the Lions Cove by Marcelo Leone. It's on Spotify, YouTube, Amazon Music, Samsung, hopefully on Apple. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And episode 5 will be out next week. This is episode 4. So episodes will be out every Saturday at 4:30 p.m. So stay tuned, and we'll see you in the next one. So see you later. Thank you very much.